This is Bruce DeLay with the Oklahoma Patriot Pastors, and today we have in studio Bill MacArthur with the Oklahoma Supreme Court Do Not Retain effort. You see, in our state, and as most states across the country, we have a problem. Ironically, the Supreme Courts of each one of our states and other courts at various levels are part of the problem in America. Yet, the ironic part is the voters and we the people know very little about whether or not we should retain certain Supreme Court justices or judges in general, because there's very little information out there about that. So for years, there's been this frustration. I don't know, do I mark do not retain or retain on my ballot? Well, today we have the beginnings of a movement that will help us. When we look at our legislators, we have a voting record. Well, when we look at our judges, we should have some sort of information that helps us make an intelligent decision as to whether we retain or not. Now, today in studio, Bill MacArthur is with us. And Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bruce.
It's great to have you. And the thing about Bill MacArthur is he's been working on the very thing a lot of people just have complained about, is that we don't have any information about judges. Well, thankfully, Bill's here today. He's going to give us a rundown on some of the history of how our Supreme Court in Oklahoma works, some of the rulings that these guys have made, who is up for retention or not retention in November this year, 2016. Happens to be three of them. And how Oklahomans can send a message to the Supreme Court, which seems to shoot down every conservative effort that we have in the state. It's always a court battle. Even if we can get it through the Senate and the House, and then we get it on the governor's desk and the governor signs it, oh, but now it's going to get hung up or called unconstitutional by a very liberal Supreme Court, even in a red state like Oklahoma. So let's dive right in today with Bill MacArthur. Bill, why should we not retain? Now, you're on this effort, do not retain effort, for all three of the judges, the justices that are on the ballot in November here in Oklahoma. Why should we not retain these people?
Well, Bruce, our Supreme Court in Oklahoma has a terrible track record of supporting what the voters of Oklahoma want done, and actually what the legislature of Oklahoma has passed. We in Oklahoma, we're kind of proud of being called the reddest state in the Union. Republican governor, House, Senate, and not one county voted for Barack Obama. We have very good legislators and more good ones running all the time. So why? Why did we have 6,000 abortions last year in the state of Oklahoma? Why can we not display the Ten Commandments at our state capitol? Even worse, why did four of our five representatives and both of our senators vote for the omnibus tax bill last December that funded Planned Parenthood and all of Barack Obama's agenda? We do have an insidious creeping progressivism in some sectors of our government, and a lot of that comes from our Supreme Court. The legislature has passed some good laws, but if they're struck down by the Supreme Court, it doesn't do any good. Let's review some of the decisions that the Oklahoma Supreme Court has made in recent years. And as a background issue here, people need to understand that the Supreme Court of the state of Oklahoma never has and probably never will challenge or disagree with decisions made by the Supreme Court of the United States. So just keep that in mind, and that's why we need to make some changes in that Supreme Court. For instance, in 2012, while Bruce, you and I and a bunch of others from our church were involved in the personhood amendment, trying to get a petition circulated to get on the ballot a state constitution amendment defining life as beginning at the point of conception, human life. Well, we were in the midst of the signature gathering phase to get that amendment on the ballot, when the Supreme Court stepped in the middle of that process and 9-0 voted that it was unconstitutional.
Now let's help the people understand just a little bit here. If you want something changed, there's a process in government to change things. Well, you can go through the legislature, you can introduce a bill and go through all that process, and if it passes and the governor signs it, it becomes a law. The other way that you can approach change is by doing a citizens' initiative petition, gather the required amount of signatures, and then get something on the ballot so that the people can vote on it through that petition. But in this case, Bill, as you just said, the Supreme Court circumvented the process, didn't even let the petition run its course to its time frame, to the boundaries of the law that says we have this many months to gather these signatures. What did they do? And you just said it, but I didn't want to miss the emphasis of it. What did they do in the middle of the process?
They stopped our petition, or our signature gathering effort, and found it unconstitutional before it was even on the ballot, much less to become a law.
So it's
now,
not
I
even.
I always felt the Supreme Court was supposed to vote on laws to see if they're constitutional or not. Well, this didn't ever make it to the
exactly.
point of becoming a law or a constitutional amendment.
They're not even waiting to shoot things down at the appropriate time. They are circumventing the process and coming in early and saying, no, we're not going to even hear that. And that is the problem. That means that we, the people, are losing our rights to be heard and to be, you know, a government of the people, by the people, for the people. It's being taken over and hijacked by groups like Oklahoma Supreme Court.
Yes, and the same thing happened again earlier this year where an issue called Question 782 was also putting together a petition to put for a constitutional amendment to abolish human abortion. That never even got into the phase of gathering signatures to put it on the ballot before the Supreme Court disallowed it.
I would have to think that they are concerned that it, once the media picks up on it, the word gets out, and the citizens hear about an effort like that effort or the personhood effort we were involved in, that they know it will gain political support, and then it will be harder for them. They'll be in the light whenever they shoot it down, and so they try to stop it early. And right now, that's just what they're doing. In other words, we don't have even an opportunity to go through the process anymore because of the tyranny that we have at the state level in the Supreme Court.
That's correct, Bruce. Now we also have lots of examples where our legislature passed some good laws that were then struck down by the Supreme Court. In 2012, our legislature passed a law stating that before an abortion, an ultrasound had to be performed and the mother would see it before the abortion, and this was being used as an informed consent for the abortion process. That law was struck down by the Oklahoma Supreme Court. In 2014, there was another law passed that abortion doctors had to have admitting privileges to a hospital so that if there was a problem with the abortion, that they could take it into a hospital and take the woman into the hospital and have her saved. But that law was again struck down by the Oklahoma Supreme Court. Also in 2014, our legislature passed a law that abortion drugs had to be used by the doctor in accordance with the FDA protocol that was defined when they approved the drug. Now, I've been in the drug industry before, and one of the biggest problems is called off-label use, where once a drug is approved, doctors start to use it for things other than the particular thing that it was approved for. And our Supreme Court struck that law down and said that whatever a doctor and his patient decide amongst themselves is just fine. Hmm. Now, everybody's familiar with the 2015 removal of the Ten Commandments from the state capitol building. It was a privately funded monument, and in the middle of the Supreme Court found it unconstitutional, 7-2, and removed it in the middle of the night.
So Bill, I might interject, even though judges don't have a voting record like a legislator would, they do have a record of how they ruled on specific controversial cases like the Ten Commandments. We know that it was 7-2. We know who voted 7 and which voted one way, and the other two, how they voted.
That's correct.
And so then when they come up in November, if any of those 7 are on the ballot, then you know, hey, I have an opportunity to voice, you know, at least for me, I don't want to retain these guys.
That's true. And the three guys that are going to be on the ballot in November have been on the wrong side of many of these decisions.
Excellent. Excellent information. Thank you for doing all this. Go ahead. Continue.
Well, big part of the problem, too, Bruce, is that people have to really do a lot of digging to find this stuff. You're not going to find some of this on the front page of the Tulsa World, but you know, and so it's up to people to do the digging to find all this information. Now, let's talk a little bit about how our Supreme Court justices are put in place.
And this is important because our legislator, you know, our legislators are voted in. In other words, they're accountable to the people. We can you know, kick them out or we can vote them in. But when it's an appointed position, it becomes much more political and the agenda can be controlled a lot more through appointments. And that's the problem we have with our judiciary is the people don't have as much say-so when it comes to which justices are on the court.
Well, in a lot of cases, that's true, correct. Right now, there are three of our courts in Oklahoma that the judges are appointed. It's called the merit selection process. That's the Supreme Court of Oklahoma, the Court of Criminal Appeals, and the Court of Civil Appeals. Now, how are these guys selected and appointed? First, we have a nominating commission, and the nominating commission has 15 members per Article 7B of the OK Constitution. Now, the nominating commission presents three candidates to the governor, who selects from those three candidates and appoints one of the three. Now, the nominating commission, the 15 members, the governor appoints 6 of those members and no more than 3 from one political party. And it's specified that these are to be non-lawyers. And in fact, they're not allowed to even have a lawyer in their immediate family.
Hmm.
Now, the next 6 are appointed by the Oklahoma Bar Association. And again, it's one member from each of the congressional districts. Now, these guys are going to be lawyers. And as you know, the Oklahoma Bar Association leans toward the liberal and towards lawyers. The last 3 of the 15 members of the nominating commission are selected at large. They're appointed by the Speaker of the House and the President pro tempore of the Senate. And they will usually end up being lawyers. And as I said, when there is an opening, this nominating commission presents 3 candidates to the governor, who appoints one of them.
So let's be honest about the nominating commission itself. I mean, it sounds, you know, like they're trying to get a diverse, you know, group of people bringing in and having input and so forth. But first of all, I'd like to know how many of the non-lawyers are making it all the way through the process. That'd be an interesting thing to find out. But second of all you have to do to circumvent this system is control not every person on this commission or every nominee, but just control the specific few that throw the vote one way or the other. That's just like Justice Anthony Kennedy on the U.S. Supreme Court. He's the one that seems to be the swing vote and change so many things. The same thing can happen at every level with these boards and commissions and so forth. And they know how to work the system. And so all this needs to be gone through, in my opinion, and rethought out. But now that I've interjected my little opinion there, 2 cents, when it gets to this point and this commission begins then to narrow it down, what happens next?
Well, as I say, they narrow it down for each judgeship. They narrow it down to three candidates that they recommend to the governor, and then the governor appoints one of those three to the judgeship.
Okay.
Now, our Oklahoma Supreme, you talked about how these guys are selected and so forth. On our Oklahoma Supreme Court, we now have 9 judges. Now, the selection process has been, you'll be happy to hear, quite politically correct. We have 2 women, 1 African American, and even 1 Native American on the court. The judges are appointed to 6-year terms, and these are called rotating terms. So of the 9 judges, 3 are on the ballot for retention at every 2-year election.
Wow, so, in 4 years, let's say, you could actually change things because you could control 6. If you did not retain 3 in 1 election and then in 2 years another 3, now you've changed the court significantly just in 4 years.
Oh, that's correct. And in my opinion, if we do not retain the 3 judges that are on the ballot this year, the other 6 are going to have some thoughts about what to do next.
Wow.
Now let's talk a little bit about the retention process itself. On the ballot, you will see the name of the judge who is up for retention. Only one name for each judgeship. And the voter is allowed to vote yes to retain that judge or no to not retain that judge. If a judgeship opens up through the judge not being retained, then the appointment process that we talked about before starts up to refill that position.
Well, that's what we want to do, is keep this nomination committee busy, this commission, and, you know, they'd have to come up with 9 different possibilities to fill 3 slots, and that would keep them awful busy. I would love to keep those guys as busy as possible. If we can not retain some of these Supreme Court justices who have been going against, honestly, not just against the people, because that's supposedly not their job, is to go with the will of the people. Well, they're certainly not going with that, but their job is to decide if it's constitutional. And they seemingly arbitrarily do so. And obviously, there's a progressive agenda and so forth that we could talk about some other time. But it's just too obvious sometimes.
Well, I agree with you, Bruce, but the bad news at this point in time is that Oklahoma voters have never rejected a judge on a retention ballot.
Wow.
Part of the reason for this is that the retention ballot draws little voter interest, but I think an even more significant issue is that the voters don't know the candidate, they don't know the track record of the candidate, and they don't know how to vote. So they just go on autopilot and usually vote to retain.
Well, that's what we hope to help remedy with this program and with getting some information out there. Now, just as an aside, the fact that it's possible for a state to do not retain and get rid of some Supreme Court justices, the state of Iowa, a couple of years back, the Supreme Court in their state went with same-sex marriage, and the people didn't like that. Did not believe, you know, their constitution. If they had DOMA in it, like Oklahoma had, due to the Defense of Marriage Act that says marriage is defined as one man, one woman, then they would, you know, then they literally went against their own constitution to rule that way. So I believe it was 4 or 6 justices that were replaced by a do not retain effort in Iowa. Do you remember?
It was either the majority or the whole court.
Wow, wow. So it's possible. That gives Oklahoma hope that we're not the first ones through the gate here. We need to get on board with something that's happening in other places.
Yes, you talked about the 2004 Oklahoma Defense of Marriage Act law. In 2014, that law was overturned, but this time by the U.S. 10th District Court a judge named Terrence Kern, who had been appointed by Clinton. So yeah, we can't blame that one on the Oklahoma Supreme Court.
No, but again, that was in our Constitution as a state. In other words, so if I'm going to be ruling if something's constitutional, you'd think you'd read the Constitution to get that information.
Sure. Now, we talked a little bit about the fact that no judge has been rejected on a retention vote. In 2014, there were three Oklahoma Supreme Court judges on the ballot, and they were retained by a percentages of from 59% to a little over 62%. Hmm. So this is kind of the what we're looking at here. About 60% of the people just vote for retention without really knowing.
But the numbers are trending, it seems, recently. From what I've heard, the numbers are trending that people are starting to get it and starting to put do not retain on judges, especially unless you just know one that's a super judge, really good judge in your local area or whatever.
Sure.
I would just put do not retain on all of them.
Sure. I agree with that, and that's why I'm sitting here today.
Yeah.
There was a bill in the legislature earlier this year for the election of judges, but I haven't heard about it recently, so I think it died in committee or something, and it called for nonpartisan or open election of the judges. Now, this would be the best method for selecting judges. An open election or a nonpartisan election would allow anybody that's qualified for that judgeship to get on a primary ballot and to get elected. But
That's not a process that is unheard of,
no.
Is it?
In fact, in 1907, in the original Oklahoma State Constitution, all of the judges were elected by the people.
Mm.
Now, this was changed in 1967 to the merit selection process for the courts that I described, and it replaced a partisan election of the judges, and that was due to a corruption scandal that was based on three Supreme Court justices in Oklahoma. Now, so just electing them isn't the issue, isn't going to solve everything, but a nonpartisan open election would give us the best chance to pick the judges that we need.
Well, it sounds to me the scandal in 1967 was the crisis they needed to change this now to a merit selection rather than a vote of the people. And we know that progressives, that's what they do. They exploit any crisis, even if they can start a crisis, you know, but they'll exploit that to their end and implement their agenda.
Well, that's true. But in 1967, they also recognized our district court, which has four-year terms, was changed from a partisan election to a nonpartisan election. So mm-hmm. They understood the difference between that. And so for the district court, things actually were improved.
Okay, so what would you say in general are some of the biggest problems with the sitting Oklahoma Supreme Court that we have right now?
Okay, number one, the biggest problem, 8 of our 9 Supreme Court justices were appointed by Democrat governors, and in fact, 6 of them by one Democrat governor, Governor Henry. Now, as I said, we have 3 Supreme Court judges on the ballot in 2016. Stephen Taylor, James Winchester, which was the one judge that was appointed by Republican Governor Keating, and Douglas Combs. And my recommendation is that we do not retain any of these.
Now, are they all like, you know, the worst of the worst, or is there some that have been right on the right side of things? Yet they're not consistent enough, right?
Well, when we talked about the personhood, that was a 9-0 decision.
Wow.
So everybody fell on the wrong side of that one.
That one right there tells me do not retain any
of them. Exactly. But even on the one that took the Ten Commandments monument down, James Winchester, the one nominated by Governor Keating, he was on the wrong side of that one. That was a 7-2 decision.
Wow. Wow. Well,
now, my feeling is that losing their job is the only thing that these judges understand. And recall, Oklahoma voters have never rejected a judge by the retention process. But if we do this time, the remaining six might get the message, and then, as you said, in 2018, we'll get a chance at three more of them.
Wow. Well, this information is great, but one of the challenges we always have is getting the word out to people. And today we're just asking if any pastors, any civic leaders can hear this information, digest it, and then pass this on to, you know, anything from a grassroots group to your church about this do not retain effort. We could literally take our state back by stopping the judicial tyranny of calling things unconstitutional that are anything but. It's just now if you don't like it or it doesn't fit in with a progressive agenda or it doesn't fit in with what the United States Supreme Court is saying, we just shoot it down and call it unconstitutional arbitrarily.
Right.
So we got to get the word out is the bottom line.
Right. We got to do emails and social media and just get the word out to people. Because I think if they understand the problem, they would know how to vote.
And that's why we want this this information on this audio file, on this show, to be linked. And you can send this to people on email, put it on your Facebook page. And it's a simple link to, you know, a audio file which gives you good information, solid historic information of how the system works, and then somewhat of a voting record, if you want to call it that, a record of the rulings of some of these judges that need to go.
Right. Now, as we said before, when we were talking about the fact that none of the judges were ever not retained, I think the biggest issue is voter ignorance. There's ignorance on what is the merit process. Who are the judges? What is their voting record? The voters just don't know about these things, and I have experienced how much work it takes to dig some of this information out.
Wow.
So your average voter is not going to have access to the information that we're talking about today unless they really work at it. Now, one of the problems I feel is that Oklahoma needs to have a voter guide. Now, voter guides are informational packets that are sent to the voters before an election, and most states have a voter guide. Before I moved to Oklahoma, we were in California, and California, though I'm not a big fan of California, had an excellent voter guide. It talked about every candidate that was on there, talked about every issue that was going to be on the ballot, talked about what the people that were for it were saying about the candidate or the issue, and what the people that were against it were saying about it. Now, after I moved here and I noticed that there was almost no information available before an election, I went to my election board and to my state representative that we should do a better job of getting information to the voters, and they both said, that's the responsibility of the voter to dig that information out. Mm-hmm. So now I understand that there would be a cost involved in putting out voter guides, but perhaps if our government had heard of the internet, we could just put a voter guide on ok.gov.
Hey, how about that?
Yeah.
And you don't have to cut down any trees in the Amazon or anything.
Right.
It's right there. Now, that's novelty. Until, though, our Oklahoma state government wakes up and is willing to do such a voter guide. That's kind of what you're starting to do here, Bill, when it comes to our state Supreme Court justices, is give people information they have to have.
Sure. And in years past, Bruce, I'd send out emails to everybody on my list that was in Oklahoma on various issues that were going to be on the ballot. And most of those people actually contacted me back and said, gee, thank you for sending that information. But to a T, most of them were saying, okay, now what about the judges? You know, who are they? What did they do? What are we going to do about them? So
we have to get the word out, and we're starting to do that, and it's a grassroots effort, so, you know, it's going to take a little time. But the more people that get on board and start, you know, forwarding things on Facebook or on their social media, it will speed this process up. We really can make a difference this November if we'll all get involved in passing this information on, like a link to this program.
Right.
Now, what's another problem that needs a solution? Voter guide, and also we got to get people to the polls.
Right. We talked about the retention vote for judges drawing little voter interest and having a lot of ignorance, but we need to have good voter turnout in our state. And this applies actually more to local elections like school boards, bond issues, and city councils, and so forth. But it is kind of run by the good old boy system in that the voters don't even know when these elections are going to be. They can be on the 4th of April or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's little voter interest in elections where there's only one issue or on the ballot. So they don't turn out. So the only people that turn out are the ones that are going to benefit from an approval of that vote.
I know. I've had that happen. Probably most people, they find out the day of or something that there's going to be an election today, and they're not even sure what's on the ballot because that information has been selectively passed around. And usually, if it's a school bond issue, it's the teachers are the only ones that know today's a day to vote.
Right. And then the rest of us, if we do find out that there's a vote, we go in and we have to find out what we're voting on by reading the ballot, which is probably the much more difficult than having information in advance.
Excellent.
I believe that all elections should be on the first Tuesday of November, and that then we'll have fewer elections, all elections will have multiple issues, so they'll draw more voter interest and therefore voter turnout.
Wow. Well, let's talk about special interests a little bit, because I just mentioned like the teachers union for one little example. But
sure,
there's a lot of special interests that really sway things and control the way local elections especially go. Obviously, the Bar Association and different people have a dog in the hunt when it comes to who's going to be on the Oklahoma Supreme Court and stuff like that. And so let's talk just for a minute about special interests.
Well, one of the big special interests in our state is the Chamber of Commerce. They're busy, business-friendly. They like cheap labor, so illegal immigrants are fine with them. And the Chamber of Commerce has an awful lot of pull in Oklahoma City on all of the issues that our legislature deals with.
Well,
another one.
I might just mention the term business friendly is a relative term, because if you're doing business unfairly and you're picking the winners and not everybody has a fair shot in business, that's only business friendly to your good old boy network, not to everyone who wants to start a business. And unfortunately, many times that's what happens with the Chamber of Commerce and what they do.
I think you're right. I should have been more clear on that aspect of it. The second one that bothers me is our education system. Do you know Oklahoma has 544 school districts, some of them with less than a couple hundred kids in it? Mm. We have the teachers' unions are the most powerful unions in the state of Oklahoma. And for each of those 544 school districts, we have a superintendent, which is a strictly administrative position. And the average salary is $137,000 for Oklahoma school superintendents.
Wow.
So we wonder why our schools are taking up well over 50% of the whole state budget.
Right.
Let me
mention something here, Bill, because a lot of people, my kids have grown and now I've sent some through college here in Oklahoma, got one in college right now. But I was told by a Oklahoma State Senator and a representative as well the same day that, just as one example, where the money is, there's not that there's not money for education. It's
right.
Not that they don't have money to give the teachers or to use in the classroom. They have money. They hide it. They're not transparent. They don't want people knowing how they're spending money and so forth. It's very difficult to get that information. Here's one example of where we could find some extra, just a little bit of extra money. At the University of Oklahoma, for example, I'm told that professors only teach 55% of their courses. Well, what do you mean? Well, They are using graduate assistants and guest professors from other countries and so forth. I went through that with one of my daughters. She's taking a math class with a couple of hundred students in it, and they can't even understand the foreign instructor who wasn't the instructor that was supposed to be teaching the class, couldn't even understand their accent enough, much less ask a question, to do well in the class. And it was very frustrating. Well, they found out that if these professors will simply teach the courses they're supposed to be teaching instead of paying these foreign instructors or graduate assistants to take, so much of a lion's share of their classes, guess what? Only Oklahoma, as one example, University of Oklahoma Norman, would save $100 million a year. Now, you throw that across the board with OSU and UCO and all the area, Claremore and Durant and all the different schools around the state, you're going to find that there's a lot of money there that could be taken and used if we just make one little adjustment. And how many other little areas are there like that?
Well, here we are around in the Tulsa area, and all of the schools are being hit with cost reductions. And so they're cutting out bus drivers and janitors and unfilled positions and a few teachers. But what about the administration cost? How many bus drivers do we have to get rid of to save one superintendent at $137,000 a year? If we took those 544 school districts and combined some of the smaller ones, combined ones that were in demographics where they have similar needs so that the students are being served as well, we could cut down that number of school districts and save a lot of that administrative cost and not have to be getting rid of teachers and so forth.
There are a lot of good people that are trying so hard to care about kids and to educate our young people in the system. There's a lot of good people. I know in my district, the superintendent recently refused a pay raise because he wouldn't take it. There are people trying to work within that system, but what many of them don't know is just how bad it is in the administrative end of it, all the way up from, because it's all connected from K through university level in Oklahoma, and there is so much money that is not getting where it's supposed to go.
Sure. Now, one other issue that is really important with special interests is federal funding for education, state issues, and for education. We wonder why we've got Common Core problems in the Oklahoma schools. Well, it's because of federal funding. And now, just recently, our schools have been told that if they don't allow transgenders in whatever bathroom they choose, that we may or will be losing some federal funding. I don't believe education should be funded by the federal government.
Exactly. I was real pleased with our Attorney General Scott Pruitt fired a letter back to the Obama administration on that, requiring us to comply to let transgender people into whichever bathroom they feel like going in today, or locker room and changing clothes with your little girls, your little boys, or whatever. And I was pleased in his tone that he gave back. He said, "You're going to have a fight if you try to implement this or try to take away our funds." He even said that only 11% of Oklahoma education funding comes from the federal government. I would think, Bill, we could find the money to make that up and basically tell the federal government to go take a hike when it comes to education.
I believe it would be well worth the effort.
All right. Let's do a little summary here. Let's bring it around and pull it together, and let's talk about this do not retain effort for the November ballot when it comes to our our Oklahoma Supreme Court justices, three of them who will be on the ballot.
Well, my summary is do not retain, vote no.
Pretty good, easy summary. But there's a lot of background to this. I mean, we're not trying to be mean, we're not trying to be hateful. We don't have anything personal against these people. We just want them to do what's right. And understand in our American system, that means your job is on the line, that we, the people, are the boss,
That's right.
And not some elites or someone who appointed them and so forth. So
true.
So what's a little bit of the history and background on the American, it just seems like we're getting away from people even knowing about our historical foundation, our founding fathers, how they created this system. Tell us a little bit about our founding.
Well, this brings up a big issue, Bruce, is what is the church's role in all of this? All of our founding principles that are found in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, they were presented as sermons in the Great Awakening during the 1750 time frame. So the issues that we use to determine our laws were set up, were basically came from sermons.
So our founding fathers, in their formative years, before they became our founding fathers, were being influenced by the preaching of the Word of God in the pulpits of the 13 colonies, by these Great Awakening preachers and these black-robed regiment preachers that they're called by the British who hated them so much, to instill freedom and liberty and the principles of liberty from the scriptures, which became formulated then in our founding documents. Many of those things came from those actual messages from God's Word.
That is correct. And another issue is the Revolutionary War. We had many key battles in the Revolutionary War that were won by weather miracles or other miracles of God that delivered our soldiers from being destroyed.
There's really no other way that a ragtag group of colonists could have beaten the largest navy and the largest, most powerful military of the time, Great Britain.
George Washington credited the victory of the Revolutionary War to divine providence.
Wow.
Now, in our founding documents, let's look at the Declaration of Independence for a minute. It says, to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. Now, Bruce, you and I have talked about natural law on several occasions. Now, natural law comes from the scriptures, but it's what comes to us just by living life and being instituted by God. One of the best explanations of natural law that I've ever read was by Marcus Tullius Cicero in 50 BC. So this is the pre-Christian era.
Yeah.
But just through his intellect, he knew that there was a God and that God had laws of nature that were intrinsic in our human nature. Another one, Isaac Newton, who was a mathematician and developed our physics and laws of motions, but he was also a theologian. Now, his laws of planetary attraction, he felt, were just basically natural law, laws of nature and nature's God. Now, back into the Declaration, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. All of these are Christian principles. They're right out of the Bible, and it's what founded our nation.
It's interesting that he starts out here by saying these truths are self-evident. Today, you know, truth is turned upon its head. Things are not as self-evident to people as they once were back in these days. They say, well, it's all relative truth. You know, they're calling good evil and evil good, like the Bible prophesied they would. And here we are now in this dark time, following such a beautiful, you know, beginning of our nation and a long run of freedom and liberty. We have to stand in this dark time and help educate people, so that truth will be self-evident to everybody. They say, well, of course, you know, a transgender, you know, a guy should not be going into the girl's bathroom. I mean, how self-evident is that? How self-evident is it that a baby is life? A baby is a person. Very self-evident, and yet still we're making the wrong choices here. We've got to get up on top of this, Bill, and I think
right.
what you're doing is a real great effort in the right direction.
Right. Now, if you look at it, the Declaration of Independence is more of our founding document even than the Constitution. The Constitution was written to put chains to limit the power of the federal government. So, but the principles that it controls were in the Declaration and in the Ten Commandments.
I might add here, Bill, just as a plug, that you do seminars. You do entire seminars on our U.S. Constitution to help people understand what the Constitution actually says, why it says it. And I just want to mention that because someone might want to hold a seminar on our Constitution, and you'd be a good guy to do that.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. This seminar that you're talking about is about 5 hours long, and it talks about the whole Christian heritage of our country and where these principles came from. And then I go through the Constitution article by article and talk about what it says, and also some of the history of how it got changed by later administrations.
All right, so now the Supreme Court and the problem specifically, the fly in the ointment, the monkey wrench in the gears here, has increasingly become our judiciary in many cases.
That's correct. Both the Supreme Court and the Department of Justice have led to shredding of our Constitution. And a lot of that came from, we went from judging our laws on the as being constitutional laws, and now we look at it as case law. Well, in this past case, we decided this, so in the next case, we can allow that. Mm-hmm. So case law, which is about all that's being taught in our law colleges these days, has really changed from our Constitution.
I don't think it would be unfair to kind of relabel case law as progressive law.
Sure.
Because that's exactly what happens from one case, and then the next is a little more liberal, the next is a little more abstract and obscure, and you keep on building on case law rather than on constitutional law, and you have a progressive system.
That's correct. Let me give you one rather glaring instance of where our Supreme Court does not follow natural law. In fact, it's very difficult for me to understand how they can make the decisions they are, because they have zero common sense in them. And a little bit of history here. Before the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973, there was a 1970 Texas law that banned abortion. Now, I'd like to read to you from the text of the Roe versus Wade decision and see if you feel this meets the natural law definitions. It says, "We need not resolve the difficult question of when life begins. We don't need to decide when life begins. Then how can we kill it if we don't know when life begins?" I mean, this just doesn't make logical sense at all, and it certainly isn't in accordance with natural law. Now, they did reference the Texas decision, and they said, this is a quote from the Roe v. Wade decision, "Texas argues that the fetus is a person. If this is established, then the appellant, Roe's, case collapses, for the fetus's right to life is then guaranteed by the 14th Amendment." And that's exactly the reasoning that we used in putting together the Personhood Amendment.
And again, that makes sense that if you have an agenda to keep abortion legal, even if you believe and you know and scientifically now we understand life begins at conception, that's a scientific reality. Well, it doesn't matter because they can circumvent the system and stop your petition process for personhood in the middle of the process rather than letting it play out.
Right.
This is the tyranny that we're talking about. Now, it's not 1973, Roe versus Wade anymore. You know, it's 2016. We know scientifically that the baby is a life, that life begins at conception. And it's certainly not a blob of tissue or something. It's not part of the woman's body. She has a right to choose over her own body. Guess what? There's how many legs and arms do you have, ma'am? You have two arms, two legs. Well, there's two other arms and two other legs and another body inside of you. It's not your body. And so this is the kind of thing that even science is being cast aside for this agenda. And certainly the Constitution and natural law have been cast aside. So we're just now, making rulings at the Supreme Court level based on an agenda, not on truth.
That's correct. Yeah, I believe a woman has a right to do with her what she wants to with her own body, but she doesn't have the right to end the life of the baby that's in her womb.
Exactly.
Now, there is one controversial issue with the definition of personhood, and that is if we're recognizing that infant as a life, which has the right to life from the time of conception, we have to address the issues of rape, incest, or life of the mother. And strictly under personhood, rape and incest should not be allowed, or killing the baby due to rape and incest should not really be allowed. If you think about it, with rape and incest, it's not the baby's fault.
Exactly. Punish the rapist, punish the, you know, incest. If there's a law against, you know, raping your daughter or any kind of relation like that and you produce a child, but don't punish the innocent baby for it.
Right. But now we talked about the church's responsibility and how the church led to the founding of the country and how the church has to take stands on things like abortion and gay marriage and so forth. And today, pastors are not preaching about this stuff from the pulpit. And I'd like to read you a quote, Bruce, if I could, written by Charles Finney in 1873. And he says, "Brethren, our preaching will bear its legitimate fruits. If immorality prevails in the land, the fault is ours in a great degree. If there is a decay of conscience, the pulpit is responsible for it. If the public press lacks moral discrimination, the pulpit is responsible for it. If the church is degenerate and worldly, the pulpit is responsible for it. If the world loses its interest in religion, the pulpit is responsible for it. If Satan rules in our halls of legislation, the pulpit is responsible for it. If our politics become so corrupt that the very foundations of our government are ready to fall away, the pulpit is responsible for it. Let us not ignore this fact, my dear brethren, but let us lay it to heart and be thoroughly awake to our responsibility in respect to the morals of this nation."
So, Bill, the separation of church and state, you know, nonsense that it's not in there anywhere, etc., has become an excuse for people to say the church should stay out of any kind of issues of the day. And yet this Charles Finney was a preacher in the Second Great Awakening, because America, after the First Great Awakening and the founding of our country, they went through a period of darkness. And,
yes.
And the Second Great Awakening roused the church once again to take its place in the society. And now I believe, and as many do, it's time for at least a third Great Awakening in America. It has to happen. God's word must come to bear on the problems and the issues of the day, the sin of the day, that our founders could have never conceived in same-sex marriage or abortion, any of these kind of things. They would have never believed could happen in this country. But here we are because we haven't done what we should do. As Finney said, the pulpits have been silent. Now we have to recover our country from where it's been. But I want to just mention this, because I know a lot of preachers that are on the fence. They don't want to stick their head up. They don't want to get involved because they know the system of their particular church or denomination holds over them the power of just firing them if they don't like what they're doing. And they have a church board or church men in leadership that come to them and say, hey, stop. You can't get involved in these controversial issues because we have to pay the bills. We want to keep people on the pews, paying those tithes and so forth. And guys, it's time to disregard and throw off all the chains that have held us back and tell the truth and stand up for in our community for God. The Bible says that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. We are to be preachers of righteousness in the day and in the generation in which we live, and on the issues that are most important, some of these issues we've been talking about. And if it means saying, hey, do not retain some Supreme Court judges, then you're not going to lose your tax exemption for that or whatever it is you're so afraid of. The love of money should not take precedence over telling the truth, right?
Right. And as it says in Acts, they were saying, is it better to obey God or to obey men? And it's as simple as that. We need to obey God and preach what is right. A lot of pastors today don't like to talk politics. In fact, during the personhood amendment, I was talking to the pastor of a very large church, and he would not, he did not want to have me gather signatures in his vestibule of his church. And basically he said, I want you to know one thing. This church is very pro-life,
right,
but we don't get involved in politics. And what I said to him was, Pastor, what part of thou shalt not kill is politics?
Wow. Let that just kind of settle in for a moment, preacher. I know that you may have to stick your neck out in the pulpit with your congregation, with your church leadership. But I got delivered of a system that I was a hireling in a church situation. I got delivered of that in 1986. If you're only a hireling, maybe you need to consider changing that and becoming a man who can speak the truth boldly as God leads, not self-censor as the church board or somebody, the big money people in the church dictate.
That's right.
How about that? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's wind it up here, Bill. Do not retain effort. Just zeroing in on something that really can make a big difference if we just get the word out to enough people. Let's go over it one more time. This November, in the state of Oklahoma, we have how many?
Three Supreme Court justices will be on the ballot in November. Their names are James Winchester, Stephen Taylor, and Douglas Combs. And I'm recommending that we vote do not retain on all three of them.
Because of their rulings on things like the personhood amendment, on things like the Ten Commandments, on et cetera, issues that are important in our society to Christian people especially, and to everyone. Abortion, obviously, is life. So we are given in our U.S. Constitution the ability to pursue it. We should not be, snuffing it out. So we are saying these three that are up for re-election or reappointment in November have done things and made rulings that warrant do not retain being checked on the ballot.
Bruce, I'm sure they're very nice guys, but our Supreme Court is part of the insidious creeping progressivism in our country.
Well, we have been speaking with Bill MacArthur, my friend, and someone I respect as a constitutional kind of historian and as somebody who has been doing the digging and saving us the effort individually. We can all, benefit from his research. And I appreciate if you would pass this link around, this audio. It will help catch people up on the issue. You can go there to the Heartland Nation Facebook page. You can go to the Truth in Focus internet radio site. And there on the Heartland Nation page, you can find this audio. We'll put that link out there and make it easy to pass around on your social media so a lot of people can hear this in our state. Bill, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Bruce.
God bless you. And until our next, is there anything else you want to say before?
Yeah, there's just one other thing. If people want more information, more detailed information on the nominating commission, the retention process, the nomination process, there's a very excellent website, and it's www.judicialselection.us. Now, this describes the process for all of the states, but the first screen you get when you pull that up, you'll be able to select state of Oklahoma, and that will lead you to information on all of the things in the process of putting in justices.
Well, I appreciate you not just catching the fish for us, but then teaching us how to fish as well. So I appreciate that. Thanks so much, Bill. God bless you, and let's do this again.
Yes, God bless you.